Well, it's hard to believe the weekend's almost over, but what better way to end it than on Joseph? One of our favorite Bible characters when you look at the life of Joseph and what great family life lessons you can pull out of his life. It's hard to believe anybody could actually do what Joseph did. Really, look at his life and you analyze what he went through, and he certainly leaves all of us a reminder of what God can accomplish in us when God is working in our lives. You look at his family background and what Joseph was going through, growing up in this family where Rachel and Leah were at each other all the time, and there was the conflict that was there, debating over, who's going to have Joseph tonight so they can have another child, and buying him off, and, he would have grown up watching this, or who could have had Jacob in this case, and the family was going through all of this rivalry between the moms. You look at the sibling rivalry that was going on, nobody seemed to be happy in this family. And they weren't happy with what God had given them. I mean, look what God had blessed this family with. When Joseph finally leaves Laban, and he's coming down to meet up with Esau, and he looks and he says to Esau, look at all the herds and the flocks that God has given me. Look at the children that God has given me. He graciously had given him. If they had sat back for a moment and thought about the fact that the cup was half full instead of half empty, they might have been much happier people. And they would have got along a lot better. And you can really look at this family and realize what a mess it had come to because people were not satisfied and content with what God was doing in their life. That's really what it was about. When you live in an unhappy family like Joseph and you grow up with children that are unhappy, our moms and dads that are unhappy, it's because we're not content with what God has given us. We're not really believing that what he's given us is what we need. That this is right for us. It's righteous of God to do it because he's trying to develop us into his family. And I think you can certainly see from this family at least that if you want to go down that pathway of storing up hatred against other people and jealousy and envy and looking around at what everybody else has and I don't have, you're going to have one unhappy life. And the happier people let go of it all, and they have the patience and the kindness, and they have the character of God because they totally trust what God has brought into their life. You look back in the early part of his life, and you look at his brothers and sisters. If you go back to Genesis 34 and just start there for a minute, it's fun to look at the background at least as to Joseph's brothers and sisters, what he grew up with and what he was surrounded with. In Genesis 34, remember the incident with Dinah, the only girl in the family, right? So what does she go? She grows up with a bunch of guys and probably would have been half tomboy or whatever in that family. But she decides in Genesis 34, Dinah, she's gonna go out and see the daughters of the land. Going to do some investigating, right? So this is his sister. And his sister walks out, leaves the community, decides to go out and check out the land because she wants to see, what are we missing out there? And so she does. And you look at what happens with the story of Dinah. She goes to check it out. She gets taken by Shechem. Maybe she was quite happy about that. Somebody actually cares about me. She's met somebody who's interested in her, showing her some attention and all that. But the next thing she goes through the whole situation where really she's raped by Shechem. And this whole story envelops at that point where, she's now disgraced in this case. And now she goes back home to her family and her brothers realize, they hear the story that's going on. And the brothers just get so angry at what these people in Shechem had done and what Shechem himself had done. And the brothers decide they're going to handle it, right? They're going to go up there and solve this problem. But, this never would have started. It never would have come to this if Dinah hadn't been the kind of person who was sitting there wondering, what am I missing out in by living in this community? And that's really where it starts sometimes with all of us. It doesn't mean that, you write somebody off. It doesn't mean that, people are necessarily bad people. But it's just when we make decisions in life or we go down a pathway where we're going to go investigate what we're missing, we got to be ready to suffer the consequences that are going to come with that. And in this case, the whole family gets affected by this now because she comes back and she shares the story. So then you find in Genesis 34, you get a little insight about her brothers because, her brothers now, they realize what's gone. And the brothers are going to make this deal. They go to Shechem and they say, oh, yeah, sure, you can marry our daughter, our sister. You can marry Dinah. No problem. Everybody's got to be circumcised. That's the rule that we have. And you can see how they treated circumcision as just sort of like some formalistic ritual thing that you all go through to be part of the family. And so they use this then to their advantage and say this is what it was supposed to be. Not at all the concept of teaching the truth and explaining to people that circumcision was a cutting off of the flesh. That this is that whole problem that Cain was put forward to him. But thought, look, if you do wrong, sin is couching at the door. You know, it's desire for you, and you got to master it. You've got to cut off the works of the flesh. That's what they should have been doing, is preaching the truth. But instead, they go there and they tell the fellows that, look, this is what you've got to do. You know, and so all the words, they pleased Hamor and Shechem, and they decide, all right, we'll go ahead with that. And then they wait until the third day, when the guys are really sore. In verse 25, it came to pass on the third day that they were in pain, that the two sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took a sword, came boldly upon the city and killed all the males. And they killed Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword. And they took Dinah from Shechem's house and went out. And the sons of Jacob came upon the slain. They plundered the city, so they didn't just kill them. They took all their stuff too. They plundered the city because their sister had been defiled. They took their sheep and all their wealth and everything. In verse 29, they took all their little ones, their wives. They took captive. They plundered even others there in the houses. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi when they got back, you've troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites. All they had done through this whole experience is bring trouble on Jacob's family. Here he had just come back down into the land now, and he's going to finally come to the land that God has given him, and God will bless him in the land. And now he's already obnoxious to the inhabitants of the land because of this incident. And you could see what Joseph's brothers were like. Their solution when somebody is abused, their solution is to just get violent. Take care of the problem. Cut them all off. Kill them and eliminate them, rather than trusting God to work things out. But that's the solution that Joseph's brothers would turn to. This is what they had witnessed in their family, really, growing up. They'd seen all the envy and the jealousy and all the hatred that was going on, all the yelling and screaming that probably went on amongst the sisters, and the anger that was there. And they grew up in basically a family that was pretty angry about what God was doing in their life, and they just weren't willing to accept it. So they took care of all that. Genesis 35, the very next chapter, God says to Jacob in the first verse, arise and go up to Bethel, go up to the house of God, right, and dwell there, and make an altar there to God, who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother. So he's going back right back to, this is where Jacob was. This is where he had seen the dream. This is the dream where he saw the ladder of the angels ascending and descending. So Jacob says to his household and to all who are with him, put away the foreign gods that are among you. Purify yourselves and change your garments. You imagine like your parents having to tell you that? You know, man, dad coming to you before you go to the gathering. Dad says to you, look, before you go to the gathering, you better make sure you put away the foreign gods. You better change your clothes, wash up, clean up, because you're in no shape to go up there. You got to purify yourselves. You got to turn into a different person to come to this gathering this weekend. And this is how Jacob saw his family. This was the conditions of Joseph and his family. And this is what he grew up in. This was Joseph's life. So he grows up in this case with you know, these kind of situations coming around him all the time. Genesis 35, the next chapter. You know, God is doing is he's unveiling for us. This was the background for Joseph when he grew up. He wants you to realize what it was like in his family, to grow up amongst his family. Genesis 35, and you skip down to like verse 22. It happened that when Israel dwelt in the land, that Reuben, so this is oldest son, Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard about it. So now Joseph's got a brother who, when the time is right, he gets the opportunity, he's going to really make sure he puts forth himself as the older brother, and he's going to go lay with his dad's concubine and have relations with her. This is what Joseph grew up with. This is what his brothers were like. This is his family like. You go over to Genesis 38, the chapter after Joseph is born. I really think Genesis 37 is sandwiched in between all this so that you really get a feel for what God is trying to do. Is he's setting up contrast and saying, this is what the family was like, and then here's Joseph. He's got a whole different approach to how to handle life. So Genesis 38, it came to pass at that time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. So he finds this Hirophel. It's like Dinah going out and visiting the women of the land. Judah decides he's going to leave the brothers. He's going to go out and he's going to get a business partner. He's going to go into business with one of the Canaanites that were there. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua, and he married her and he went in with her. So now Judah's got himself a daughter, a wife in this case, coming from the daughters of the Canaanites, and he goes into her and she conceives and has a son. And you go through this whole situation with Judah and with this woman that he's got. And you watch what happens, and the sons are born. He's got a couple of sons. He's got Ur, and he's got Onan, and then he's got Shelah that comes along. And then Judah took a wife for his firstborn. So, you know, you're moving forward in time. And so the Bible isn't really giving you a chronological record here. Instead, what it's doing is it's compiling events and packing them all together so you see the contrast and you get the point. But this is what Joseph's family was like. This is what his brothers were like. So now we've moved far enough along the line that now Judah's firstborn son, he's going to take a wife for her. And so he takes this wife for her and he finds a woman and, you know, and he hooks her up with Tamar. And then he finds out that, well, and you look down at verse 8, for example, Judah, in verse 7, but Judah's firstborn was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and so the Lord slew his firstborn. So now his first son is gone. And then Judah says to Onan, well, go into your brother's wife and marry her and raise up an heir to your brother. This is what they did in culturally. This is what you find later on compiled into the law, that if the older son died, then the next son down would take the woman, have a child by her, and raise up a child to the brother. So Onan, you know, he doesn't want to do that. So he goes into his brother's his wife and he admitted his semen on the ground that he should not be an heir to his brother. And the thing displeased the Lord and God killed him too. So now two sons of Judah are dead. All right. And Judah says to Tamar, well, look it, you know, why don't you just remain in your father's house until my son Shelah has grown old enough? And Tamar decides, well, there's no way she's going to do that. She's not going to wait that long. And maybe Judah won't even give her Shelah in this case. So in the process of time in verse 12, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died, and Judah now was comforted. And he went into the sheep shearers at Timnah, and he meets up with his old friend, Hira the Adullamite. All right? So now Judah's lost his wife too. So really, this whole family has fallen apart, and they're all dying. And so he goes in there, and the next thing you know, it's like, look it, Judah decides, or Tamar in this case decides, she decides, all right, I'm going to solve the problem myself. So verse 14, here's what Tamar is going to do. She hears that Judah's going up to the sheep shearing thing. She decides, all right, I'm going to cover myself with a veil, wrap myself up, and sit in an open gate, which was on the way to Timnah, for she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given to him as a wife. And so she wasn't given to Shelah, so Judah really wasn't going to come through on that. He probably figured that God would just slay him too. Then when Judah saw her, as she thought she was a harlot, so she's got this plan. Now, when you look at the plan that she comes up with, you realize she knew her father-in-law really well. She knew Judah. She decides, all I got to do is dress up like a harlot and be there where he'll see me, and I know that I can convince him to come in and have sexual relations with me. And so that's her plan. It's not like she thinks, well, maybe this will work. You know, she's so convinced this is going to work for sure, and now she's going to have a child. And so she does, and she goes through the whole process. Give me the pledge to make sure, you know, that I can, you know, get because that's what they would do in those days. And so she gets the pledge, and then, and you remember the story. The whole thing unfolds in the end that here's Judah, you know, and he's going to, like, condemn Tamar for being a harlot and, you know, playing the harlot like that and going off with another person and having a child. And in the end, she points the finger at him and says, well, the man who did it is the one who gave me these. And all of a sudden, it comes right back on Judah that, oh, boy, you know, he got caught. And this was Joseph's family. These were his brothers. These were his sisters. This is what he grew up with. He wasn't in one of those real nice families where all the brothers and sisters were in a spiritual growth and they're all going to Bible schools, they were going to gatherings and coming back and sharing all the spiritual lessons. Oh, no. He grew up in a family where everybody was out there trying to find out what can we get out of this life and really not believing God wasn't involved in their life at all. They didn't really look at God. They probably didn't even talk about God's involvement in their life. This was the background to Joseph's family. So, you know, you look at his family. He grows up with moms that are jealous. He grows up with a sister who wanted to go out and investigate what she was missing in the family and what else is out there in this world. He's got violent brothers. They kill all the Shechemites. His brothers wanted to kill him too. This is the way his brothers were. They got foreign gods in the family that they're carrying around for whatever they were doing with those. He's got immoral brothers. He's got brothers that are like willing to take the father's concubine, another brother who's like willing to go out and just a harlot. No, she can catch this fella. That's the kind of man that he is. This was Joseph's family. We got a brother who's lost in the business world. He has brothers who were really quick to condemn and judge. You know, when you look at what they did, here were these brothers that were growing up in this family, and they find out what happened to Dinah, their sister, and immediately they judge the other people. Like, you can't do that to our sister. And they go out and take vengeance into their own hands and kill all those people in Shechem and take their stuff. And so they're really fast to judge somebody else who makes a mistake. But they're not willing to look in the mirror and realize that, wow, what kind of life am I leading? You know, what am I really doing? And do I really trust God at all? Or am I just going to be one of those people that takes care of it myself? And you find out if Joseph grew up in Genesis 37, you find out that he tells the dreams, and all his brothers did is they hated him. They envied him. He was the favorite son of his dad. And this is the family where Joseph grew up. So for those of us that are sitting there telling God from week to week that, you know, I really would do a lot more for you if I had a better family, go back and look at Joseph's family sometime and really think about it. Imagine if he had used that excuse, because that's all that is, an excuse. You look around at your brothers and sisters that you have. Maybe you don't have the best family. Maybe you don't have the best moms and dads. Maybe you don't grow up in one of the best ecclesias. And what we do as young people, we use it as an excuse. It's a crutch for like why we can't give our life to God, why we can't really trust God for his involvement in our life. But you know, Joseph didn't do that. In the midst of all of that, he trusted God. He listened to his dad. He probably had discussions with his dad. And him and Jacob would talk about things that had gone on in Jacob's life. And Jacob would tell him about how he schemed through this and he schemed through that. And in the end, he found out scheming wasn't the way to survive. He had to come to a point where he trusted God. Imagine telling Joseph about how he had wrestled with the angel. And he pleaded with him to change the family, to somehow do for them what he had never been able to do. And the angel blessed him at that point. And this is what Joseph grew up with. And he became a different person. He didn't use all that past and his bad family life. He didn't use it as an excuse. He didn't use it as a crutch to explain like why he couldn't really serve God. And we go home, all of us, we got to really examine our lives. You know, look at what God has given us. And instead of looking at the cup that's half empty, look at the cup that's half full. Look at what God has blessed you with. Look at the opportunities he's given you. Look at the invitation he's granted all of you to be part of the elect. And he's called you into his family. A privilege that hardly anybody of the 7 billion people on this planet, hardly any of them have had. And you have had that opportunity. You've been blessed with great spiritual blessings in Christ Jesus. And what you have to do is take the same approach as Joseph. Instead of worrying about all the stuff that didn't go right, all the things in your family that God hasn't given you, instead look at what he has and thank God for it and try to figure out, what are we going to do? And what Joseph did, and what he actually, when you look at his life, what he set out to do and how he solved this problem. Because all of us, if we grew up in Joseph's family, we could have all made excuses for why we wouldn't be righteous either. We're going to be just like all of them. You wonder, how do you get out of that rut? How do you get out of that hole of just getting into self, you know, worrying, and you're all into yourself and you're depressed about your life and your family situation, and maybe things aren't going right with your boyfriend or your girlfriend and all this stuff is happening. How do you get out of it? Well, you follow the example of Joseph. What did he do? He focused on saving other people. That's what he did. He got out of himself and his own problems, and he set about to save his family. So when you look at what he's actually doing, like with the dreams, for example, you find out what happens. He tells the dream. He doesn't tell his brothers the dreams and his family the dreams because he wants to look better than everybody else. It doesn't fit his character at all. He's explaining like this is God's working in our life somehow. This is going to happen. And he explains these things, hoping that he can change the brothers. He goes back and tells his dad stories about what the brothers are doing, hoping dad will get involved and somehow solve the family issues. And his dad just didn't seem to be able to do this at this time. Waiting, probably, you know, Jacob's waiting and waiting for the day when God will do something that he had not been able to do. Not at all anticipating what it was going to take to save this family. But that's Joseph's approach. So when you go home this weekend, look around for who can you help in your family. What brother, sister, mom, or dad? Who can you help in your family? Maybe it's a nephew. Maybe it's a niece. Maybe it's an aunt or an uncle. Maybe it's a friend at school, somebody that you can get involved and try to help them learn about God. What can you do to bring somebody to God and help their life? And what that will do for you is it gets you out of all of this self-looking that you do and all the worrying about what I didn't get, what I wish I could have, and instead you focus on somebody else. And that is, when you follow Joseph's life, that is what got him through. He constantly was working on saving his family. So that's his basic approach. He faced the weaknesses of his problems and of his family. He looked at them, he analyzed them, and he determined not to let those things pull him down, but instead he focused on What is God going to try to do with me to help me save this family? And it's a great approach that he had to life. That's what got Joseph through all of his problems. I mean, you look at all the chapters that you don't have time to look at today, but you look at how would he ever deal with the fact that he's down there in the pit, his brothers have taken him. Here he was out there taking food to them and doing what his father said, and he goes through this whole thing. He gets there, and all they want to do is they're so jealous of him, and they think that this is the chance. We can get him. We can get rid of this favorite of dad's, and now he'll be gone out of the family and solve all their trouble, right? A lot of that good that did. But they put him down there in the pit, and you find out that down in the pit, you know, he's down there begging for his life, please get me out. And some of the brothers want to kill him. Some of the brothers look at him and say, oh, we can make some money on this guy, and they sell him off. This is all they thought about Joseph. Joseph was just like something you buy at the store, and you can just like use him as a piece of meat and sell him off and make some money on it. And they really didn't have any kind of love for him at all. And yet, Joseph's function in life is he's trying to think about through all of this. He comes out of the pit, he gets sold to the Midianites, he's walking on his way down there as a slave to Egypt, and he's probably wondering all the way down there, what is God doing? What's he doing in my life? What's happening here? Because he had all these good intentions, and everything he tried to do with his brothers, all the things he tried to accomplish, it seemed like they never worked. And now he's walking down to Egypt. And then he goes through all the events in Egypt. You know, he gets into the household of Potiphar, and he's trying to do his best there, and he's working with people there, and people, you know, they look at his character, and they respect him. And then Potiphar's wife decides, here's her opportunity, and she's going to grab Joseph and lay with him. You know, and he runs from here, and he's like, how can I do this and sin against God? Can you imagine having that kind of faith in God that you would go be taken away from your family, away from all these young people here? Somebody takes you up into Alaska somewhere, away from all the Christadelphians, and you're up there all by yourself among some Eskimos, and some Eskimos are up there trying to get you to do some immorality or try some drugs or do something, and you've got the self-confidence and the belief in the relationship with God that even though there's nobody there of the family that's ever going to know about this stuff, is that you turn to somebody and you say, I can't do that because that would be sinning against God. That's the kind of faith Joseph had. As a young person like you, he had that kind of commitment that he wasn't going to give in to the things of this world. When all the family was gone, nobody's watching but the angels. And he knew God was working in his life. He had that kind of confidence in God. God hasn't let him down. He doesn't understand it right now. He's probably praying for wisdom to wonder, like, what is he doing down here in Egypt? He doesn't get it. But he has confidence that somehow in all of this, that in everything, God is working for good. To those that love God and are called according to his purpose. That's the kind of confidence that Joseph had in everything. Now, what we're going to look at this morning, though, is you look at the test that Joseph runs his brothers through. So finally, it gets to the point where Joseph's elevated in Egypt, and now he's up to where he's next to Pharaoh. And the famine comes on. God's orchestrating all these events. The famine spreads into Israel, and now the brothers have to come down, and Jacob sends them down there to get food. So you find that he runs them through these tests. Because Joseph, you know, you look at his life and you wonder, like, why didn't Joseph just reveal himself to his brothers right away and say, hey, look, I'm now second to Pharaoh in Egypt, and this is the situation. But if you had been Joseph growing up and you're watching, like, all the things you tried to do to save your family always backfired. You tell them the dreams, it backfires. You know, anything you did, you try to help them out and go and bring food down to them, it backfires. Everything you're trying to do within his family, it's like God didn't want that to work. And so now Joseph has been put into a position where he's a changed person. Now when something comes in and he sees an opportunity and the brothers are here, he doesn't just like jump on it and say, oh, I can show them now I'm second in Egypt and look what God has done for me. Now Joseph instead, he's now thinking deeper. You know, what's God doing this time? What is this all about? And he tries to figure out then, all right, here's an opportunity. We'll run the brothers through a test. It's almost like Joseph moves into the role of an angel at this point. And he's doing the kind of things that angels do in our lives. They run us through these tests to find out what are we really like. So he runs them through the test in Genesis chapter 42. You look down at verse 15, verse 14 there. Joseph said to them, he said, it's as I spoke to you, saying, you are spies, because he had charged them with being spies. And in this manner you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh you shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. So that's the first thing he's going to do. Send for your brother. We're going to test to see whether you were really telling the truth. We're going to find out if you're really honest people. You see that again in verse 19. For those of you that do Bible coloring, you can look at, this is what Joseph is trying to figure out about his brothers. Are they changed? Have they become people now that are willing to be truthful before God? Or are they still the same people that he knew before, years and years ago? So he said that in verse 16. He said it may be tested to see whether there is any truth in you. Or you looked down because he had charged them as being spies. Verse 19, if you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined to the prison house, but you go and carry grain for the famine of the houses, and bring your youngest brother to me, that your words will be verified. See, this is what he's trying to find out. Are you willing to tell truth now, or are you still going to scheme your way through life, tell all these lies, and it's just your basic strategy of life? So the brothers tell him, look in verse 21, they say to him, when they said to one another, you know, we're truly guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Ooh, God's making the brothers think back. See, this is what Joseph's doing. He's giving them time to reflect over the events of life. He doesn't just tell them right away who he is. He wants them to think about what is God doing, and he's watching how this unveils. And so he's listening because he understood their Hebrew. And the brothers are talking to each other. And they're realizing that, wow, man, Joseph maybe didn't even realize this, you know, because he was down in the pit and they're down there. And finally he hears the brothers saying, oh, we're guilty. Guilty, that's a word they didn't use very often. We're guilty concerning our brother because we saw the anguish of his soul down there when he was in the pit. He was pleading, he was crying with them probably, please don't do this to me. You know, we heard all that and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. Well, see what Joseph's doing? Joseph's adding things up, and he's figuring out, all right, there's a conscious level now in the brothers, finally, where they're realizing that God is working in their life. It's not just like, what can they get out of life anymore? But now they're starting to realize God's brought this into their life to make them look in the mirror and figure out, look what you did to your brother Joseph. And now something's going to happen to you. You're going to be put in prison. This, I think, really was part of Joseph's plan by imprisoning them and holding them, that they would think back before when one of their other brothers had been in prison and sold off as a slave. So this is what he's trying to do. And yeah, it's nice to see he would have realized, the brothers realized, that they were guilty. And I think it's also fun to realize the fact that they were saying that therefore this distress has come upon us. That's an acknowledgement that God is doing something in your life. That's a key thing that Joseph would have looked for, that they're realizing that God is involved. You skip down to verse 28, and he said to the brothers that my money has been restored when they found the money in their sacks. And there it is, here in my sack. And they and their hearts have failed them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? Well, that's not something they probably said a whole lot in that family earlier either. And you know, Joseph's now going to find out about the fact that they're finally having an awareness of God in their life. They're aware that God is working with them. You find on the second trip later on in Genesis 42, when they come back down, the second trip that happens, because the time went by and again they needed more food, that Reuben, he spoke to his father, and he said to his dad, he said, look, we got to go down, and we got to take Joseph, because he doesn't want to see us again, or we got to take Benjamin. He doesn't want to see us again if we don't bring Benjamin. And Jacob says to them, look, in verse 36, that you have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more, Simeon is no more, and you're going to take Benjamin away too? You know? And Reuben comes along, and look at Reuben says in verse 37. Reuben spoke to his father saying, kill my two sons if I don't bring them back to you, and put them in my hands, and I will bring him back to you. So Reuben, you know, this is oldest guy, this is the one that went and lay with Bilhah, he wants to be like the firstborn and all those, right? He says, look, if I don't bring them back to you, you can kill my kids. Like, you know, Jacob, he really wants to kill his kids. I don't. Reuben wasn't far enough along spiritually. I don't really think you'll see he's as far along spiritually as Judah was. But at least he was willing to suffer something, but he just says, yeah, kill my kids. So then you look at what happens in chapter 43, in the reading that we just had today, and you look at how Joseph gets to see how Judah is a changed person. Judah's been through all these experiences now. He's gone through the events with his sons. He went out, had his experience with Hira, his business adventure. He's been through the event with Tamar. He got embarrassed about that. Everybody found out what he had really done. And God had brought these events into his life, and Judah is changing. He's actually becoming a different person. This is what Jacob had hoped for when he wrestled with the angel, and he pleaded with the angel, change my kids, do something in my family. And so it's slowly happening over time. The still small voice is starting to work. So in Genesis 43, you watch how Judah, you watch his transformation. He says in verse 3, he tells his dad, he says, but Judah spoke to him saying, look, the man solemnly warned us saying, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. You know, we can't go back without Benjamin. That's what he tells his dad. You skip down to verse 8, that Judah says to Israel, his father, he said, send the lad with me and we will arise and go and that we may live and not die. You know, we need food, dad. Send him with me. We'll go down there, both we and you and also our little ones. So you start to see all Judah's caring about more than just himself. He cares at least about the family, that the family will survive. And in verse 9, I myself will be surety for him. And from my hand you shall require him. If I don't bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. And Judah is spiritually growing. He's going to take full responsibility for this. And this was exactly what Joseph was hoping for and what Jacob had prayed for, that his children would finally develop. So finally in Genesis 44 then, we get to the chapter we were looking at when the brothers come down there, and you watch how Joseph watches the development of this family. And he talks about listening with Judah's confession as he goes through. You see in verse 12, they searched and began with the oldest, left off with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. So Benjamin's down there with them now, and he sent them away, put the cup in Benjamin's sack. You look at Joseph would be watching to find out, how are they going to respond now when Benjamin, who's the favored son of the father now, not Joseph anymore because he's gone, now we have the same scenario though with Benjamin. He knew that his father favored Benjamin. What are they going to do now when they see an opportunity to cash in on Benjamin and let Benjamin take all the blame and walk away from it? What are they going to do? Are they still like they were years ago, 20 years back, or have they actually changed? And so you watch how Joseph would have watched this confession out of Judah, and he watches how Judah has become a changed person. So you find out, like in verse 14, he talks about that Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, and they were still there, and they fell down before him on the ground. You imagine the flash in Joseph's mind of the dream. And the brothers are all there, and they fall down, they bow down before him on the ground, and he's thinking about that. In verse 16, Judah said, what should we say to my Lord? What should we speak? How can we clear ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Oh, that was huge to Joseph. The awareness of God and a realization that God was working in their life. This is what Joseph had never been able to accomplish with his brothers earlier in life. And now they're confessing that God is working in their lives. He's found out the iniquity that now they're slaves. Both we and the brother, we're all going to be slaves in whom the cup has been found. Then Joseph says, well, you know, no, I don't want you all. You know, I'm just going to take the one that has the cup. He's like putting it right in front of them. Here's your opportunity to walk away. You can all walk away free and just leave that favored son down here. And you see if you want to do that. And he's forcing them to relive the events that they had been through some 20 years back. And he's trying to find out, have they become changed people? And Judah just steps forward and he says, no. He says, look, we can't do that. Verse 18, Judah came near to him and he said, oh, my Lord, please let me speak a word in my Lord's hearing. And do not let your anger burn against your servant, for you're like Pharaoh. But look, and he tells the whole story about, look, you ask us. You're the one that asked us about our brother. Do we have a father? Do we have a brother? You're the one that did this. You're the one that raised all this to the surface. And we told you the truth. We didn't lie about this. And Joseph's sitting there and he's saying, oh, this is right. This is exactly what he was after. Can we get truth out of these brothers? And he talks about how his dad in verse 20, he's got this dad who's old and he's got this special son. And dad loves his son, just like he had done with Joseph. But this time, Judah's not full of envy anymore. Oh, no, this time he's not ready to just like do something because we want to get rid of this guy out of the family. This time, Judah's a changed person. And he talks about, look, this is a father and this is our brother and the father loves this man. And in verse 30, look, dad loves this man so much. His life is bound up in the lad's life. If something happens to Benjamin and we go back without him, my dad could die. And finally, Judah cares more about somebody else than he did about himself. And this is all the things that Joseph was trying to do. And verse 32, Judah says, let me bear the blame. Let me take it. Let me stay instead. I'll suffer the consequences of this, but let the child go. Let Benjamin go, the young brother, because I can't bear to see what this will do upon my father. And, you know, imagine how Joseph, he's just like, at this point, he just loses it. Because that's all the stuff. For years, he had tried in his family. He had tried to get his brothers to get to that point where they would see God working in their life. They would care about somebody else more than they cared about themselves. And finally, he sees it. And all the lights would have gone on, and he realized that, wow, this is what God was after all this time. All those things he prayed about, all the things he'd hoped for his brothers, all the things that Joseph had thought he would accomplish, God had to remove Joseph off the scene entirely in order for this to work. And he did. God was still working. The angels were there. And so Joseph, he spills the beans. He can't control himself anymore. And he makes himself known to his brothers and then tells them all about what had happened. And so you find out at that point, you know, the brothers, you know, imagine if you had been with them, you'd be probably thinking, well, what's he going to do to us this time? Now he's in control. What's he going to do? And the brothers can't believe that Joseph could just forgive him like that. How can he possibly forgive what we did? Look at what we put him through. Look at where he ended up. How can he possibly forgive us? And Joseph would just say, look at, you know, I understand that, you know, God sent me. Look at these phrases that he uses in chapter 45. For God sent me before you to preserve life. In verse 7, God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth. In verse 8, it wasn't you that did this, but God. He made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house. In verse 9, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. This was Joseph's approach. He understood God had done it all. And he's trying to explain this to the brothers, and this is why he could forgive them. So, for those of you that go home to families, for maybe your families aren't the best, and maybe your brothers and sisters have done things to you, or maybe somebody else in the ecclesia has, or your CYC, and people have mistreated you in the past, keep the focus of Joseph. Pray for them. Try to save those people, and it helps you just relieve all of that off of you, all the anger that you might feel and the vengeance that you want to take. This is how you get this off your chest. You focus on saving other people. And then when the time comes, and they finally come back like the prodigal son, you don't sit there and point the finger at them and remind them about all the things they did wrong. You say, look at, that's okay. God was in all of that. God was using all those experiences in the past to bring us to this point. And that's how you create happy, godly people. You look at this in Joseph and you realize how, man, this was his approach. This is why he could forgive his brothers. He's one of the greatest examples of forgiveness in the Bible. And you find out that on the way back, he knows his brothers and he warns them on the way back. He says, look, when you guys all take off and you go back to get my dad, I don't want you arguing on the way. Don't sit there and blame each other, because I know some of you were more responsible than others. Some of you wanted to kill me. Some of you wanted to sell me as a slave. Maybe some of them didn't want to do it at all. But he said, forget it. Let it all go, because I've forgiven you. And now you got to forgive each other. And even at the end, it's really fascinating to watch. But here they come down. They live in Egypt for a number of years. But at the end of Genesis, in Genesis 50, right at the very end, it's fun to see that finally when they're down there and they've lived there for a number of years and they've seen Joseph's position and Isaac, you know, and Jacob had come down and all the family was there and they lived together for all those years in Egypt. You'd think that after whatever it was, 15 years or so, you'd think that the brothers would have finally realized that Joseph really did forgive us. They would have come to know him as a person. But at the very end, when Jacob finally dies, and the brothers saw he was dead. Look at Genesis 50 at verse 15. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, oh boy, what if Joseph will hate us? And he may actually repay us for all the evil that we did to him. What if he was only good to us all this time because dad was still alive? And they're thinking, you know, this is how much they themselves couldn't do what Joseph did. They couldn't forgive like Joseph had. But he had forgiven them. They couldn't figure out, how could he possibly do that? Maybe in their minds they're thinking, well, maybe he's only forgiving us. He's putting on a good show because dad's still alive. And now what are we going to do when dad's gone? So they make up this story in verse 17. And they say, that, look, here's what your father told us to say this to you before he died. And they say in verse 17, thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now please forgive the trespass of your servants, of God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. You see why? He can't figure out, like, why don't you get it? Why don't you understand? I let this go. I don't hold those kind of grudges. And I hope dad didn't think I did either. But they're telling him this story like, this is your dad worrying that you're still holding on to this. And the brothers had made up this story. But Joseph looks at me and says, look, I'm not like that. That's not the kind of character godly people are. And his brothers, they fell down before him on their faces, and they said, "We're your servants." And Joseph looks at him and he says, "Look, don't be afraid, for am I in the place of God?" And he says, "Look, as for you in verse 20, and this is a really telling point, I know you had evil intent. Read that carefully and realize that about people that do things against you. Joseph says, "I know you meant evil against me. I know this is what you thought, but God meant it for good." Can you imagine being able to say that about your life? That you could take people who had mistreated you and look at them and say, I know what you were thinking when you did it. You had evil intention against me, but God was going to bring something good out of this. And that's why I let it go. And that's the approach that we want to have. You know, he had good in this, as it is this day, to save people alive. And that's what we want to remember about Joseph. Now we come to the emblems this morning, brothers and sisters, and here's our opportunity to look at somebody who's even greater than Joseph. When you look at the Lord Jesus Christ, and you look at how all the things about Joseph that we look at, about saving his family, the focus on the others, this is what Jesus did. He was just like Joseph to an even greater degree. No matter what anybody did to him, the focus was always on saving the many. I've got to get through this to save the many. And even when they crucified him, it's, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing," because he realized that God meant it for good. And this is the Lord and the Savior that we come to remember this morning. So as we take the emblems this morning, let's reflect back over the obedience that Joseph had, and the concern for his family, the cooperation that he had with God in all the events of his life. And give God time to influence your family. Don't give up on anybody. Don't give up on your brothers or your sisters, your moms, your dads. Some of these things take time, and it takes time for God to finally work in your family. Yeah, but trust God. Whatever he brings in, trust him, and don't insist on your own way. Be like Joseph, and be willing to, forgive the mistakes that other people make. And let's adopt the faith that Joseph had, the faith of the Lord Jesus Christ, who, that no matter what God put before him, no matter what people did to Jesus, that he was willing to focus on saving them. And let's go home this week with our families and with our ecclesias and with our friends and try to be like a Joseph and the Lord Jesus Christ, to look at what God's doing in our life and try to analyze how can God use us to try to help save these people and learn to live entirely for God.